Very, very excited to have Fanny Howe here. I'll tell one short story before I tell you what's going on in the near future. When I had very small children, I read Fanny's book Nod so often that if I got into the tub, my daughter would carry it over to me and say, "Mom, you forgot your book." So as a writer and a mother and a woman and a human, reading Fanny has been in a very important part of my life. So I'm very excited that she's here as our writer in residence this month. So I'd love to introduce Jim Dunn, to introduce Fanny Howe, because I was too shy.
Thanks, Amanda. I'll keep it really short. A couple months ago, I read with Fanny, and in your introduction, Michael Franco said when he first plunged into Fanny's work, and that's a great way to put it, 40 books of plunging into work that is so brave and courageous and really confident, and her latest, Needle's Eye and Second Childhood, she takes you to a place, other worlds, you know, and other worlds you may not have a grounding for, but it reminds me of John Wiener's and Garrett, really a magical world. And about 12 or 13 years ago, we were invited through Bill Corbett to a Fanny's greatest non-reading ever. They had this great event for her collected poems, and it was held at the Ambassador to Ireland's house on Comm Ave. And they had all these people there. It was catered, and Ben Watkins was there, who did the cover, and Fanny was there, and we all gathered around, and we were about to enjoy a fine reading from Fanny, and at the last minute she said, I don't think I'm going to read tonight. And it was great, because Fanny is completely, like John and Garrett, subservient to her muse, and as her spirit comes out, and in person she has this gnomish, leprechaunish gleam in her eye, and she is self-deprecating, very Irish wit like John Wiener's head, but the work is just way out there. So about a month ago, I was honored to read with her. And I really felt that it was one of my best readings, because reading with Fanny made me a better reader. Reading her poetry makes you a better poetry reader. And listening to Fanny makes you a better poetry listener. So hopefully we'll all be better tonight. So it's my honor. Hope she comes every year. Last time she was here with Garrett 3 years ago was such a great reading. So I'm really excited. And I'm very honored to welcome Fanny Howe.
Thank you for all coming here. And it's very moving to me, because I have such a sort of an imaginary relationship to Gloucester. When I was a child, we spent a summer in Annisquam during the war. My father was over there, and so it was my mother and my sister and me and a woman named Fanny, who was her best friend, who was also the beloved of Charles Olson, who used to come down then to the beach and sit with us seductively and looking at her. And so that sort of weirdly has stayed fixed in me, that wonderful summer in Annisquam, and then coming to Gloucester, of course. So this particular trip called to me because of getting to spend time with Garrett and all of, and to walk around the city a little bit. So I'm just going to read some poems. For some reason, I spent ages trying to organize myself for this reading. And so it may be horrible, because I may have thought too much about it. So I'm just going to go through it and assume you get it. This one is called Ambivalence. At the ninth hour, you want to be clear. If you're sleeping, don't wake up. At the ninth hour, it's always night, a few hours after four. Why did the names of seasons depress you that year? It was near the end, but not quite there. You had an hour to be happier on either side of Massachusetts Bay. But you were stricken at the word summer. I told you I couldn't turn around because I was going to Quincy. A place, not a season. The seasons are over. You have no land to leave to your children, not even a square the size of paper. That's why place names are saddening. Put them back in the drawer and return to Back Bay Station, to the hour of your humiliation. Only when it's over can you give the blessing. And this is sort of a strange little series of poems about the sense of being in outer space. There was rain on the porthole of the shuttle, because rain rains sideways on a tipped wing. The clouds were below with the puzzle of the past. Bits of world clicked into place. The wrong god saw this and showed no humor. Instead, tears rained down on Iran. Then slowly and as usual, the left god turned into a luminous eye, blue more blind than white. Both you and the passenger beside you were two God would never see again in any sense as faithfully as then. One has perseverance, but is full of fear. Another has no perseverance, but is brave. Which one would you rather sit beside? My stamina isn't up to either. My brain is like the sun I can't look at, or like a slave still tired in her grave. Devils stroll with angels into our daily lives, but we don't know who is which until it's too late. From burned forest to subway hole, what can't I recognize but must? Your cosmology is an impossible tangle of planets and stars crashing into each other. Strands, yes, of fine colors that glorified eyesight and the ability to recognize. A dangerous trust. You will tell her the decisions are only guesses. This is why suicide is hard to choose, even when you're dying. Pebbles like minced bones under 70-degree sunshine. It's this place, part symbolic of something you never met. Each raindrop on the wingspan falls on the drop beside it, and all the way to where there is no one left to call it anything. Flight is an underused option on an airplane. The sky had an accident, and out came the land. Silver and yellow glandular illumination along the estuary. At 7, the shuttle is darkness itself. Then in December, at 9, the walls tangerine. Colors design the eternal swim. There's a lot of sort of flying and dreaming in this reading tonight. So it sort of goes in and out of up and down. There is an ocean under the sea. The sea has become a field of yellow wheat. The ocean stays fluid underneath. Shrimp grow in it. They are attached by gravity to the cell of form. Slabs of quartz and ore and tobacco brown figurines all stand sentinel along the border with the orbs, UFOs, and patrolling choppers. Strangers once emerged from a tradition where nature was seen as divine emanation. Now there would be what? But the memory of a unicorn in a tapestry. Please wash and love me. I hauled so many children after me with ropes and spears and nets, like sea creatures that others would eat. Without them, I have no purpose. As in the gospel account, I believed in their belief. But now there would be what? For he, Peter, was kneeling, go away from me. The brother who she didn't know stayed near the door. So she raced off. She stood when the police came, seeking coherence in everything. The total machine of retribution presses on, regardless of desire or what you did. This is incredible. we're breaking up. One is continuous in striking new paths, redirected energies every second on the ground. See a need, respond, inspire others if you can. Fight the inability to let go of power. Even if it destroys others and an idea that someone can't give up. Vocation, mutual. The person or place wants you as much as you want another. And that's sort of the end of that little grim reverie about giving things up, I guess. 30 pointed huts, small fir trees, shifting scale of persons to surroundings. The white rocks shrink and grow gravely in the night. This earth cannot live without holy rites. Lots of hills to climb up and down, a straight ravine between them. Turn to the right and you will fall to the left. Like a leper, the earth wears a beard to cover its scars. But it hates coverings and prefers to be seen and, if despised, to melt away quickly. No gloss is allowed to weaken the words of Scripture. And this is, again, a kind of riff or something off of thinking. A woman named Marilyn Buck, a friend of mine who was in prison for life, for political actions. She was one of the people who got Assata Shakur out of America to Cuba, and she paid for it. And this is called A Prisoner's Dream. Once manifest, now not, wildlife of the arrest. Once clouds, like claws, like television, static and milk. Skylit minerals separated by yards of glass and steel, sleep. Manes of hair, shining ideas, tin frost on true pines. Buds of Concord. In everything living, what thought trails inward. And this is a poem dedicated to I.F. Anansky, who was a Russian poet, part of the sort of golden period in Russia at the turn of the century with Akhmatova and all of them. But he was an obscure one and a scholar, and he didn't live very long, but he was actually highly respected by the poets of his time. And I got sort of interested in him and went on to Google to look up his poems, and there were the most abominable translations. So I took one of the horrible translations and and tried to enter into what he must have meant. So the sky was yellow. Then white snow followed. On a hand, an amethyst, a lilac in hospital light. Whose fault is it when no one visits? Last night I dreamed I was in a peaceful place, but woke up freezing and ashamed. On a side street in my sheets, my beloved passed as a shadow. Maddish, reddish, his fist clenched for a fight. I recalled his body color being soft like a child. Honey, I called. We were too late. God and the gods have moved away. Up, up. Outside the jewel air, the sun melts and fire. A star is an amethyst, minus the poet. And this one is a little more grounded, called Clouds. There's a softening to the bricks outside, and the thousand-mile storm is leaving where it's coming from the long ago to my abode. I'll sit at the window where it's safe to say no. I won't go out. I won't work for a living. I'll study the clouds becoming snow. Not with a spyglass, but with a wild guess and only three words. You never know. Now I see others like me thinning into the least thing and drifting out like the frost of dust, downstairs cries of lust. Up here, a requiem mass and light to lead the clouds home to the past. All of us, poor at last. And then this is actually two pages of Monastiche, which are poems that are made of a single line. There, it's sort of a French form, which there was a beautiful anthology of Monastiche once, which I never forgot. And the idea is that each line is a poem by itself, but it's like Sanskrit or something. It's just a word. In other words, each word is part of a word. It's not, it's all about sound. So it's called Walking in Sentences. Having mercy on someone is easier than forgiving them. A man limited by logic imprisoned the people whose thinking was infinite. Stars without light hold the others up. Mid-sentence is darker and deep, so you can't read it. Oyster shell pink sky inside, my prison. The difference between a man who shoots others and then himself and one who shoots others and runs away is determined at birth. With the spirit, you can feel everything. I had a brother, but no friend to be naked before. Lucky to be lonely. Frost formed a circle around a little one's lips. She licked up the mist on the window pane to see eternity. To live alone, live as a child would. One boy has a bomb strapped to his chest, and another rides his skateboard through the traffic. A sun that looks like nine, but it's already noon. It's when? Red raspberries turned black on that path. The wild geese cry and the swing creaks, and we tramps wait to be damned. Crack anything and you will let the spirit out. Stephen, heaving in a door jam, spit in the palm of his hand. Silver pennies engraved forever on a cover. If you watch the sides carefully, you see what's coming up. Red leaves like chili peppers on the trees. But you remember being the child whispering to the outside. Every page is a leaf. It took years, but a woman grew to love her husband before she died. He wore a jacket made of grass. And then I was going to read this longer poem, but you might get bored by it. It's, I don't know if any of you saw the show, the Black Mountain show in Boston. Yes, so this was my, when I was asked to do a little reading there. A lot of us were asked, and then I did this one. And it sort of gets through, I think, to something I'm trying to express here, and it's also dedicated to Garrett, and it's called Unteachable and Unteachable. First there is a minimum house, and then a quiet house. Catherine Lips has her back to the dining hall, her foot extended, and looks at the lake and the Black Mountain. And Charles Olson sits beside a window. Annie Albers draws knots, and John Dewey, the Democrat, weaves thought into matter. These are their relics. They had fabrics hanging in space and lines of music without notes. This is why they stand by a door like those who choose an aisle seat. They have left these traces of their silence, neuroses, and histories. Pots and dishes and textiles open to air. They are a proud and poetic people. You can tell they can't be forced to stay anywhere. They don't say die, they say disappear. A transparent leaf, a selection of leaves, a piano where leaves of music flutter. One of them could uncover and reproduce the pattern of a kitten's coat by using string of various colors, pulled tight before the fur has grown in. Look at their faces. Annie Albers has seen everything. John Cage has not and still has hope. John Dewey is analytical, but his mouth is soft. Dewey noticed life is education enough. Can you teach life? Yes, it's experience, experiment. So what is the teacher's purpose except to offer a space for failure? Dewey said we get used to the chains we wear. A free-hanging space divider, knots of wool and string uncurling, mirrors of stars and plasma from their brains that have evolved at the same rate as Einstein's. Ancient people drew glyphs, and Catherine Litz, in a bag, choreographed one. Merce Cunningham made an alphabet out of his arms and legs. The mathematical genius of the glyph carvers shows that time is not progress. Deepness gets you somewhere. You find what you know already. Recognition is the score. Joseph Albers taught without knowing the English language. Paint and proportion was his language. It was the Weimar period in Germany. Bauhaus had ended under the aesthetic of Hitler. Painters painted in abstractions and codes. So that's that one, which was a response to the show. So I hope it isn't too delirious for people who didn't see the show. That's all. And this is the last one, which is called The Shoes. And I honestly feel this is the last poem I will ever write. So I'm going to read it. It's called, the little quote at the beginning is from an Irish, not a monk, actually. He was like a monk, but he was a scholar in the 8th century. And Ezra Pound, it turns out, was very interested in him. I didn't know that when I got interested. And I was furious that Ezra Pound got there first. And the main line that I like from Eriugena is, the one who sees is the same as the one who runs. So this is just like a little set here. And it's called The Shoes. Stop in your tracks, take off your shoes, close your eyes, the word knows what to do. For the blind, touching is seeing. Home, in. The word is like a flood in shape and speed. You will like the way it runs east and west at the same time, echoes and solidifies and breaks apart. It feels like a northern light, but it's the word. The word makes no sound. The word never made no sound, and will not ever, out of parched minds and tongues, break this law. The word is not particles or waves or tangles. It runs all around. The word wrote itself and continues to write, stuffs the papyrus away in space, invisible ink, and yet it runs. It runs ahead of the mouth of the West. It meets itself running the other way. If you want to appear, turn to another. The word lives alone everywhere, lives as a pariah that only listeners will know by ear. The word doth say and attend only to this sad refrain. Listen, we did our best. our lives were saved. It wasn't fair. We had to let the animals die. The second to last came at dawn. He shoveled up the roots and burned them. There were about 100 boots from the soldiers who died in Iraq before and after Turkey and Iran. They were dirty and curled at the toes. What should we do? What can we do? Take off your shoes. You've walked far enough. Take them off and feel the ground. You've come a long way against the sun. What's about to come? Crusty desert, stone-grown towns, barefoot children, not even a crown of thorns. Salt rivers, snow-white animals dipping into them. The same names. We don't have a name for holy. We don't have a name for true. We don't have a name for God or Lord. But the word still holds. Will we row across a rubbery sea, vomiting, singing, falling over, losing our voices, our wits, our hearing? Will we be glad to die? If a shoe is lying on a highway, it indicates an accident. When two shoes are crossed, it means instability. When two shoes are lined up, it means a door. You will never see the face, but can guess the age. Sneak away. The race is ending. There might be a brighter night when stars slide forward and we disappear. Always hold both east and west, and be sure to wear two shoes. Put your feet on the ground, Moses. Take off your hood. And what's that in your hand? My staff. Your coat? The sheep enjoy the smell. Take it off and throw it in the bin. Everything human is poisoned. You must burn, not bury one. In a man-made world, you can't buy wood. So there we are.